Breakfast with Martin Besser. 6 to 9 weekdays. Jacaranda FM.
Welcome back on the show once again, Nicole Engelbrecht. Good to see you again.
Thank you so much.
Last time you were here, we spoke about true crime podcasting and stuff. What a life you have. Have you always been interested in crime, Nicole?
I can't say I've always been interested in crime. I think early on it was more mystery. But yeah, probably from teenage years onwards, definitely true crime, you know, looking at all the cases that were happening and feeling kind of bad that I was so interested in them. So it's quite nice now. It's a bit of a relief. I don't feel so weird anymore.
No, because most people are. You know, these shows, we watch them on TV, we will listen to, I mean, the amount of people that listen to the podcast series tells
you. Oh, yeah.
I know you also have a slightly grim fascination with it, but we share it.
Yeah, look, it is a bit of an obsession. If it's a TV show, if it's a podcast, if it's a book, I find crime fascinating. Reasons why. Why things happen, how things happened, all that kind of stuff, completely fascinating.
Well, you're going to love this book.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
This takes us back to, was it 2003, January of 2003. 10 men were tied up and brutally attacked at Sizzlers. It's a gay massage parlor, Seapoint in Cape Town. And one of them got to tell the tale.
Yeah.
And he dragged himself to a nearby petrol station, regardless of the fact that I think he was shot in the head and his throat was slit. And then writing this book, and I know you say right from the start, when you write a book like this about a massacre like this, your number one focus is to have regard for the families. Am I right?
Absolutely, yeah. That was, you know, in all my true crime content creation, that's always the focus. And certainly in writing this book, because there were so many victims, so many family members,
sure. To,
you know, I don't... Whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm producing, I don't ever want to make their pain worse. You know, so that's always very important, you know, number one priority for me is keeping them in mind.
And even, I mean, it does get quite bloody and quite graphic in the book because, let's be honest, it was an incredibly graphic. The judge in judgment described it as, I can't remember the exact quote, but like a next level case of savagery.
Unparalleled savagery.
There we go. That's the particular quote. And really is.
Yeah.
It is. So you got to get to the gory details as well in telling the story. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's an important part of it. You know, so really when I set out to write this book, in working with Lee Fisser, who is the sister of one of the victims, Warren Fisser, she was really concerned about not including too much of the salacious gore stuff. And that's, you know, that she knows me as a content creator. She knows that's not my focus. But it was important for me for readers to understand how horrendous this crime was. Because if you don't understand that, then you don't understand the importance of the things we talk about after, such as parole, such as what the victims have been through, the families have been through. You know, so while I didn't want that ever to be the focus, I don't want the victims to be remembered like that. We do need to know what they went through in those 3 hours.
Well, you're telling the story of what happened in January of 2003 in Cape Town that night. So 9 of them lost their lives.
Yes.
The one guy was a Quinton Taylor.
Correct.
Managed to drag himself to a petrol station. It's significant, obviously, for many obvious reason he survived. But that would give the police a chance to identify what happened there that night. And there were 2 killers.
That's correct, yes. So Adam Vust and Trevor Tace, both of them were really different individuals.
Yeah.
You know, you would never put them in the same crime at the same time. And neither had a history of violent crime. But Quinton Taylor, surviving, you know, he refused to lay flat on his face. He insisted on looking his killers in the eyes. And that's, doctors said, essentially what saved his life. Because the bullets took a different tract than the other victims. And he was from his hospital bed, you know, in conjunction with Inspector Jonathan Morris, able to bit by bit give his evidence and then finally identify Trevor Tace in a photo lineup.
Yeah. You even focus in the book on the detective, obviously the interviews.
Yeah.
And if you think to yourself, you know, would that be interesting? I mean, just to draw a parallel to a recent series that was on TV about Butibur, that whole process of the detective sitting in front of a killer.
Yes. Yeah.
and how they get the killer to the point of confessions.
Yeah. And trusting them and talking about these terrible crimes. It's I cannot imagine the kind of emotional labor that takes from somebody to befriend someone, so to speak,
to
be able to get them to open up.
The shocking thing for me was you sketch a certain picture, I guess, of what a killer that is capable of something like this would be like.
Oh, yeah, of course. Mm.
It's the same with all the other famous or infamous murderers and serial killers.
Yes.
And then when you watch how it unfolds and you read how it unfolds and how they behave when they're sitting opposite the detectives and the SAP, you realize you wouldn't know the difference.
That's the thing.
They are just, at the end of the day, guys that decided that night or the early hours of the morning to go in and to do something like this.
I mean, that's horrific.
And if they walked out there, you and I, it's not like they, you know, have a board hanging around their neck saying serial killers, mass murderers. Yeah.
No horns, no nothing. They're not the dregs of society where you can kind of go, ooh, I can see by that person's way they walk to avoid them.
Absolutely.
That's the big question. Does the book address the question? I don't want to give too much away. I'm trying, you know, it's like that fine line between creating interest and spoiler alerts.
Sure.
Does the book answer the question why?
So I try to, because that's one thing that neither Adam Vust nor Trevor Tate ever really told us why. And even to this day, Adam Vust is giving several different stories. None of them are the truth, as far as I'm concerned. So I did try to answer that question as far as I could. I think I come up with a pretty probable theory. However, I don't think that the only person in this world who will ever know the truth is Adam Vust.
Yeah, because the other one is not.
Yeah, because, you know, I can think what he may have been thinking at that time, but it was probably slightly off from what I, you know, the theory I come up with in the book.
Because the reason he gives is a robbery gone wrong.
Absolutely.
Which, let's be honest, nine men dead.
You don't come to a robbery prepared to commit mass murder.
And one of the biggest.
Yeah. 100%.
Once again, spoiler alert, but the reason we're only referring to one of them.
So Trevor Tate passed away in prison in 2008. He had a heart condition, passed away from that. And Adam Vust is the only surviving perpetrator at this time.
Another part of the book that I like is also just unpacking the kind of angst and confusion and feelings that must come up with the families when someone like this is up for parole.
Oh.
That is also something that I know you do touch on.
Yeah, and that was really important for me. If I'm honest, that's one of the most important reasons I wrote the book, because, you know, when I started chatting with Lee Fisser, who was forced really to push herself into this world of parole and criminals, and that she never wanted to be in, when she discovered that Adam Vust was up for parole, that was really something that I wanted to focus on, was just educating the public on what is happening in our parole system, what needs to change, how it's not been implemented well, and really how that's failing the offenders, the victims, and our, you know, communities as a whole.
Is there any discussion about the fact that this was obviously a hate crime, because you chose a specific part of society, people in society, and also a specific time to go and do it? So obviously the fear as well that you're now putting into other people who are in the LGBTQ community after this happened, because you're not safe.
Yeah.
Sex workers in general.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this had a huge impact on the LGBTQ plus community at the time in Sea Point and across South Africa.
Yes.
The interesting thing about this as a hate crime is, you know, in court and in their psychiatric assessments, it was determined that neither of them had any homophobic tendencies. So, yeah, very interestingly. But I dig a bit down into that in the book, and I really think that there's a possibility that there was an element of homophobia, but perhaps not in the way we thought. In Adam Vust's own thinking, what he wouldn't have presented it as homophobia, but it certainly was if you look down.
There was a targeting still.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't look away from that. The fact that these victims were vulnerable because they were members of the queer community and because they were sex workers.
Yeah.
You do also touch towards the end of the book, obviously, just to get back to the parole situation. And we had an interesting conversation about it with Professor Labuschagne as well, about the parole system in this country. Parole reform is just, I mean, we were just sitting with our mouths open when he explained how it works sometimes. Who the people are that judge it. There's a need for reform in this country, let's be honest,
absolutely,
when it comes to parole.
Yeah.
And this also highlighted in this book. What were they doing there? Did Trevor ever talk about the reasons they were there?
Yeah, so he both gave full confessions. We're using that word loosely because a confession should be true. But I think really in my research, what I found was Trevor Tice's truth was very different from Adam Vust's truth. Vust was certainly the driver in this crime. And I think his motives in going there that day were different from Tice's. Tice claimed he did not know that murder was part of the plan. I do not believe that. You know, he had everything that was there, he could have used the masks. You don't take petrol to a robbery, So he claimed that he thought it was just going to be a robbery and it went wrong.
Mm.
And I don't believe that. I do believe he went in there with the understanding that people would get hurt, but he thought it was going to be a big financial payoff. And I think Vust's motives were very different.
The families, I know that you reached out to a lot of people in writing this book. Mm. Not everyone returned your calls necessarily because they probably just never want to talk about this again. Mm. Am I right? The ones that did help you in writing this book, how are they?
So, you know, particularly Lee Fisser and Quentin Taylor, both just incredible people. I feel so privileged to have been able to connect with them and talk to them. I tried to be really sensitive, especially with Lee, because...
Just unpack who you're talking about for the sake of people.
Sure. So Lee Fisser is Warren Fisser, one of the victims of that night. She was 14 years old when her big brother was murdered in the Sizzlers massacre.
Sure.
And up until pretty much 2020, she hadn't hidden this from anyone in her life, but she hadn't also deeply shared it, even with her husband at the time, that, this is what had happened.
Mm.
And it was just, she was trying to compartmentalize. She's moved to Canada. And suddenly when Vus came up for parole, she was sort of thrust into being forced to
deal with it,
represent her family.
Face it.
Either her or a mother.
Sure.
And, I think she's in a far better place now. One of the most important reviews I've received of this book was from Lee Fisser, in her saying that she was terrified for this book to come out because she wasn't sure what to expect.
Sure.
But she's grateful that we wrote it the way that it's been written, and that it's not salacious, and it educates and honors the victims.
And Quentin Taylor is obviously the guy that got away, that survived.
Yes. Mm.
How's he?
Quentin is, I think, one of the most phenomenal people I've ever met. He's an incredibly strong man. I've had the pleasure of chatting with him a couple of times, and we continue to stay in touch because he's got his own book about his life in general that he'd like to publish, which I'm going to try and help him with.
Oh, good.
And yeah, no, absolutely. He's really just an incredible guy. You can see I never took Quentin back to that night in our conversations because I had his statement and I didn't see the point.
Okay.
I wanted to know Quentin today.
Okay.
And I think I got that. And
how old is he today?
Similar age to me. I think he's 42 or 43. Mm. Yeah, and he's living in Cape Town now. And he really just, he understands this is part of his life. He just really does not want Vust to be released now. Understands it's going to probably be something that might happen in the far future. But he just wants to be able to, continue living his life, inspiring people. That's something that's really important to him. He really wants to use what he's done to inspire people.
I really don't want to give away too much because you need to go and read the book.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at any point, are you convinced that Adam Vust, that there's any remorse?
I think Adam Vust is very sorry that he got caught. I don't think he's truly sorry that he committed the murders.
Mm.
I think he's sorry that he has to spend his life in prison because of it.
Mm.
But true remorse in terms of it was never my place to take those people's lives, I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because he continues to lie. He spent 8 hours sitting with the victims in a victim-offender dialogue and lied throughout.
Oh, really?
Wow.
And this was 2 years ago. So
when will he be up for parole again?
So this is, you know, one of the difficulties that we're having is still, you know, the Department of Correctional Services is not giving the victims feedback. So his first parole hearing, which was in 2018, was essentially defunct because they failed to contact the victims.
Wow.
So then when everyone figured out that they had actually had a parole hearing without them, then everyone was rushing around to get a victim offender dialogue, which is supposed to be the first step, not the last step. So he should have come up again in 2021, but the victim offender dialogue was only held in 2023. And since then, the families have heard nothing. It's supposed to be every 2 years, which, again, for me, someone with nine life sentences.
Nine life sentences.
You know, the victim should not have to come back every 2 years.
Yeah.
Yes, give the man his parole allowances, but make it every 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, don't make them come back every 2 years.
So once again, this book, yes, it is about mass murder and killing of essentially sex workers in a gay massage parlor in Cape Town back in 2003. But it's also a look into our judicial system about parole, the detectives, the way that they tracked it down, and obviously the survivor and his role in it. Mm-hmm. The families, there is so much that this book unpacks. It is a great read. More than this, I'm going to give everything away.
Please don't.
This interview is just going to become a podcast about the book. Thank you for keeping it coming. Dare I ask who's next on your list that you want to investigate?
Yeah, so interestingly, I'm actually releasing two books this year. So I've got another one that I've co-authored that's coming out in July that I've co-authored with a gentleman called Dr. Bryn Hodgkiss.
Yeah.
That book is called Killer Stories. And that is true crime come narrative psychology. He interviewed 13 serial killers when he was doing his PhD here in South Africa. He is a South African, lives in the UK now. And we use those stories anonymously to dig deep down into the stories that these men told themselves about themselves that led to their crimes and how that is similar or different to us. And the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves as so-called normal people.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you for writing the book.
Sure.
And keep them coming.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here again, and I really appreciate it.
Breakfast with Martin Bester, driving you to work every weekday from 6 to 9 a.m.